Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel and Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on strategic relocation when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? It's pretty obvious that something is wrong, and wrong with the Ten Commandments because they have been banned from our public schools, our public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple, time-tested laws, we now see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, and they're teaching these 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto to our children in public school and in our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national consciousness nationwide. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but she can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. Our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 not only practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, but they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. That is not separation of church and state. And there's at least one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer its effect or to be affected by it. Now, whether you call that the Mosaic Law or the Law of God or the Common Law or Natural Law or Karma or something else, it's automatic. It just works like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which happen to be the natural penalties for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a four-hour commentary. It's a commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, and you can call and order one right now for yourself. The number to call, 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine, send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? All right, we've been talking about this thing of strategic relocation. It's a book written by a fellow named Joel Skousen. Joel Skousen, probably a Mormon guy from Orem, Utah. It seems like the Mormons are the only people in the country, well, I shouldn't say only, the Amish and Mennonites are pretty well prepared. When this thing turns turtle, I don't think you're going to have the Amish and Mennonites knocking on FEMA's door, and probably most of the Mormons will be pretty well prepared and able to take care of themselves, which is really good for you and me. You stop and think about it pragmatically. When a hurricane is threatening, everybody runs down to Home Depot to get plywood to put over their windows and doors and to protect themselves. And, of course, everybody runs out of plywood because nobody's prepared for a hurricane in Florida. Well, not until the hurricane service says that in 24 to 48 hours it's going to strike your town. Then, you know, you get real excited and you run down and buy some plywood. And, of course, there isn't enough. You know, you'd think you people down there in Florida would all have some plywood, at least enough plywood for your needs to batten down your house before you evacuate. That you'd be prepared in advance. Nobody is, but then, you know, you'd think you ought to be. So this fellow, Joel Skousen, wrote a book, and it's called Strategic Relocation. His thinking is, why don't you get out of Florida and sell your house and let some other fruitcake take your house, of which there's plenty of them. I mean, you know, you're not going to save everybody in America from his own folly. My job isn't to save every fool from his folly. There's a few people out there that listen. A few people are prepared, you know, and take care of themselves. Most people rely upon the government to take care of them. And that's what I object to the most. Like down here in New Orleans. Now, you good folks down in New Orleans, I don't begrudge you living there below sea level. I just don't want to pay for your folly. And our government has it in their heads that if a flood comes and destroys New Orleans, that all of the rest of us here in the country, whether we want to or not, have to pony up the money to rebuild New Orleans, the Gulf Coast. If the insurance company doesn't pay you to rebuild your house 30 yards from the shoreline, I have to do it. So I mentioned to you a little earlier, you know, I live in Tornado Alley. And if a tornado comes and knocks my house down, I do not expect anybody in Seattle or San Francisco or Louisville, Kentucky to pony up a dime to help me rebuild my house. I selected this location. I'm here because I want to be here, and I accept the risks of being here. And yes, I've got some plywood to rebuild with. And Skousen is an iconoclast. He's a loner. He's a nutcase. He's a fruitcake. He's a survivalist. My God, the man believes that you ought to prepare for these events. And so he has all these sections in here, and we've been talking about natural disasters, you know, like hurricanes and so on. But there's some man-made disasters, you know, like economic consequences for our prolific spending and our lifestyle problems here in the United States. I did a series of programs three weeks ago, I guess, and I said, are you people prepared? Remember, I did a review of a book over here called The Bubble, you know, The Bubble Quake. And Skousen's got a section here on economics also. He sees this bubble quake. He doesn't call it a bubble quake. He's got another name for it called depression. But, you know, what difference does it make if you're wiped out by depression, or you're wiped out by hurricane, or you're wiped out by a tornado? Or you know, a wipeout is a wipeout. When your house is destroyed and you've lost all of your assets, or you've lost a major portion of your assets to your life's work, you know, like those people down there in Biloxi, Mississippi, you know, they'll interview some poor guy and his wife. And my God, this is everything that they have in their lives wiped out. Hey, I feel sorry for you, but you know, folks, you selected to live in Biloxi, Mississippi. You chose that place. I didn't. I didn't come up here and point a gun at you and say, hey, listen, we're going to throw you out of Louisville, Kentucky. You're going to live in Biloxi. And there's hazards in Biloxi. And I reported to you at the end of the last program, there's a lady that came to school here. She lives up in Maine. She lives down on the beach. And she got wind of the fact that there's a volcano down in the Canary Islands that's about to fall into the Atlantic Ocean. And when it does, it's going to trigger a tsunami. And that tsunami is expected to go across the Atlantic Ocean and hit Maine. And she was mentioning that. She said she put her house on the market. She's going to sell it and move to higher ground. I said, my God, I've never run across somebody like you. You are a lunatic fringe, lady. You've got to be out of your mind. Nobody looks into the future and prepares for something like that. Well, Skousen does, and George Gordon does, and this lady from Maine does. And one of these days, that may happen. And let's suppose that it does. And the volcano falls into the ocean, a tsunami occurs, and on the coast of Maine, thousands of people are wiped out or killed, like you just saw over in Indonesia. And the news media will rush up there, and the president will rush up, and senators and representatives and FEMA and all these guys will rush up there, as if, oh my God, look what's happened. We feel so sorry for the people of Maine. Hell, everybody in Maine has the same information that this lady has, don't they? Well, if you don't, then let me give it to you. But I wanted to report to you here in this last program on the series over here of other ominous signs called nuclear suicide. At the end of 1997, there are ominous signs that the United States leadership knows something is coming, but they're unwilling to warn their own citizens. The current administration, this is talking about the Clinton administration, is even acting as if it wants to invite war. I personally heard the announcement on the radio on the 10th of December, 1997, that President Bill Clinton had signed a presidential directive to the military that changes this country's basic military nuclear doctrine. The doctrine that was adopted in 1997. First, the United States will no longer plan to win a nuclear war, only deter it. Second, that the United States military will no longer plan to launch on warning, but will absorb the first strike. Third, that all missiles will be taken off alert status. This ensures that we cannot change our mind to get an attack off the ground, even if we detect a massive launch by Russia or China. Now, did you know that that had been implemented by the Clinton administration back in 97? I didn't know that until I read it in this book. Now, any military strategist can see that this is a suicide pact, not a strategy. Now, the second stipulation in Clinton's directive changes the first idea from stupidity to insanity. The only effective strategy to deter a nuclear war is to let your enemy know that you plan to launch on warning. This absolutely ensures that our side is able to use the majority of our nuclear weapons before they are destroyed in their silos. And two, it guarantees that the enemy will take the maximum number of destructive hits, even if his missiles are successful in destroying the United States targets. And third, that many of the enemy's missiles will be wasted, because some of the U.S. targets will be empty upon arrival. Now, what was announced was historic, ladies and gentlemen. Even an evil sense that has received with glee by the leftist press and the anti-nuclear lobby, James Bell, the National Security Advisor, which is a misnomer if I ever heard one, who made the announcement, spoke with some subtle derision of forces, presumably in his own military, who are uncomfortable with this new direction, as if they were an impediment to this new view of peace. Well, I'm glad to hear at least some military leaders know the evil implications of this insane move. But sadly, none of them will risk their career to speak out about the terrible implications that this policy has on American national security. And I'm sure that they understand that it was the most crucial and fatal aspect of passive unilateral disarmament, This action actually ensures that we will be attacked by a massive first strike, and that it will be massive because the Russians know that they will get one and only one chance to obliterate all possible U.S. targets and will bear no automatic risk of retaliation. Their only risk, then, of any retaliatory strike will be from any of the nuclear submarines that are still intact after the first strike. However, even those submarines will not be able to launch if the Russians can take out all of our communication systems in that first strike, which they surely will try to do. And you can be assured that the Russians know how exactly and know how to structure this massive first strike. If I was able to locate every military communication site on the internet, you can be sure that their spies have the full list as well. So here Skousen comes along and says, I can identify all of the communication sites in America off of the internet. The Chinese the other day knocked out a communication satellite in orbit. Kids, let's wake up to reality. A nuclear war is in the offing. Not only do we have the signs and symptoms from our own government, not only from our own news media, but we also have it from Bible prophecy. Boys and girls, America is going to be nuked. How bad will it be? I don't know. Hell, I ain't a prophet. God doesn't talk to me. I don't have any direct communication with God. That's George Bush talking to God. But I haven't heard anything about George Bush changing the Clinton policy back to a nuclear first strike position. Now, you know, maybe something happened and I missed it, but I didn't hear about that. At least I haven't had it bandied about in my press. Now remember that the man that wrote this book, this guy's name is Skousen. This guy is an old-timey military man. He's a Marine pilot from the Vietnam War. This guy's a trained killer. He had to be an officer. Well, maybe he's not a general. He may not have been living in the Pentagon, but, you know, the guy knows a little something. Writes a book, and he says, hey, listen, I'm going to get the hell out of San Diego and Seattle. Those are prime nuclear sites. And in this section over here, he's not just talking about hurricanes and tornadoes, you know, and how to put hurricane clips on your roof, but he's talking about a nuclear first strike. And our national leaders know it. They're prepared for it. All of the Congress, the President, the Cabinet, all the people that are in the know have hard bunkers, concrete bunkers that they can survive a nuclear attack in close proximity to the blast zone. And I'm sitting here saying, hell, I think that the average waitress, you know, in Louisville, Kentucky ought to know about that. I think that the average plumber, carpenter, electrician in Stockton, California ought to have just as much protection from nuclear attack as the President of the United States. Of course, I'm a wild-eyed lunatic fringe, but, you know, it's just my thinking on the matter. What in the hell makes the President any better than a carpenter? You know, all of us are people. We all want to live, don't we? And I'm not excited about dying in a nuclear war. And evidently our president isn't either, because he's taking preparations or precautions paid for by billions of U.S. tax dollars. So those of us that are down here at the bottom of the barrel, we're paying our tax dollars to make sure that President Bush and Laura and probably George and Barbara are well taken care of in their silos, in their underground bunkers. What the hell about the rest of us? And I'll tell you what makes me so damn ticked off about this. They don't even tell us. You know, I'm not expecting the government to come out here and build me a hardened nuclear bunker over here, you know, like the Hitler bunker in Berlin. I just would expect them to say, hey, kids, get ready, because here it comes. Be prepared. Think about it. Hell, we were better prepared in 1950 than we are in 2007. At least they used to tell us, hey, be prepared, it's coming. So back in the 50s, a lot of us, you know, I didn't, but, you know, a lot of people in California were building bomb shelters in their backyards. They don't do that anymore. But here's our President Clinton clear back in 97 over here now says, well, we're going to absorb the first strike. We are not going to launch our missiles when we know that the Russians have already launched theirs. Now, how do you like that, kids? So that means that when the Russians launch 300 missiles, they'll come over here and they'll destroy all of our missiles in their silos. And then if there's some of them left over, if five of them survive, we'll launch those five in retaliation. And you need to remember that the Russians and the Chinese are communists and they're both kissing cousins. Always remember that, kissing cousins, as I call them down here in the South. Well, this guy Skousen calls this nuclear suicide. He says there's other ominous signs. He says U.S. military is beginning to practice anti-biological warfare procedures. U.S. soldiers are going to all be forced to take the anthrax vaccine with all of its side effects and dangers. And if we have an interim war in Korea or in Iran or Iraq or someplace else, which is still a looming possibility, our troops may get a major dose of biological and chemical warfare before they ever go into battle, and perhaps even tactical nuclear weapons. And notice, then in no way are the citizens themselves being encouraged to prepare against biological terrorism. And what good is a team of soldiers equipped with gas masks and protective clothing if it does nothing to protect the citizens themselves? Are these little teams really going to be themselves capable of cleaning up in the aftermath of these horrors? This is all merely a show of perfunctory lip service without any practical use. Now let's pause here for a second and think about this. You people live in New York, and you got 11 million of you running around there like ants, you know, in an anthill. And let's suppose that somebody, a terrorist, or the Russians or Chinese or something, they drop a bomb on New York, or they unleash anthrax or something. And so here's the firemen. They come out there. And the policemen, they've all got their gas masks on, and they're all ready to go to work over here. What the hell is the purpose for this? Isn't it to protect the citizens of the city from the effects of the gas, the anthrax, or the biological or the chemical hazard? Hell, the only people that are protected are the guys that have got the gas masks and the moon suits. And all the rest of us are totally unprepared and unprotected. While all of the disease bacteria and pathogens and the chemicals are floating around, the only people that are protected are the firemen and the policemen running around in their gas masks and their moon suits. Skousen points out that kind of perfunctory nonsense and says, what kind of nonsense is that? So the signal then to anybody that's got a brain that isn't dead yet is to get the hell out of Manhattan, because there's no way to protect you there. Which is why I wrote the book called Strategic Relocation. And so if there's a way for you to make a living, let's suppose you're a waitress in downtown New York. You know, you're working at McDonald's in downtown New York. Can't you work at McDonald's in Springfield, Missouri, or Stockton, California? I mean, you know, there's McDonald's all over the country. So for all of you people living in these high-risk cities, these major metropolitan areas, you're a plumber in Atlanta, Georgia. My God, did you think that we people over here in Missouri, you know, say in Forsyth, Missouri, are going potty in an outhouse? Hell, we all have indoor plumbing here, you plumbers. There isn't any occupations, there aren't any trades or callings or businesses that you've got in New York or Atlanta, Georgia, that we don't have here in Forsyth or Branson or Isabella, Missouri or Gainesville. You don't have to live in Seattle, Washington or San Diego, California or Chicago, Illinois. You know, you can live in a non-nuclear drop zone or target area. You can live in an area that's not a major target for terrorists. And you can make your living there just like you're living right now wherever you're at. It requires getting off your dead ass and going doing something about it, though. You know what I mean? You know, when you get down to where the rubber meets the road, you know, somebody's got to get up off the couch and walk over to the door and open it up and walk out. Now, there's a little more to it than that, and I don't deny that. But, you know, if you got to thinking about the ominous signs of nuclear suicide over here, you know, our leadership in this country have looked at it, and they're prepared for it. And I'm just reporting to you that if the president and the cabinet and all of the muckety-mucks in government, from the top to the bottom, are prepared for nuclear war, don't you think you and I ought to be prepared for it? And if they're prepared for biological attacks, don't you think we and I ought to be prepared for it? Now, they get theirs paid for by you and I. So after we've paid for all of the muckety-mucks and they've got their hardened silos and their protections in place, don't you think we ought to take a couple of nickels and prepare for ourselves now? After we've taken care of everybody else, don't you think maybe I'll think about Sally and Joe? Just to be real selfish about it. Don't do it before you protect the government officials, but at least after they've been provided for, start thinking about yourself and your kids. He says that, as for my feelings, I don't trust either the Russian leadership nor the American leadership or anything that they've professed to have said about the so-called demise of communism. It is a carefully crafted fraud, and my feelings about the nearness of danger may be premature, but they are certainly not incorrect. In time, these things will come to pass, and you're going to probably live to see them, and you're going to get very sick or even die if you're not minimally prepared. Better to be prepared years early than a day too late. Now, the nuclear threat itself and how to relocate around it. Now, I've done a lot of research on the restructuring of the United States and Canadian military forces in order to help you determine where the newest targets will be for Russian missiles. What follows is our current situation in North America, and some of you may or may not be interested in this much detail. But many of you should know where these weapons are located and how close you are to them and what our true military situation is. As a former military officer, I can tell you that we are skating on thin ice. That's what I said a little earlier. I said, you know, this guy's a trained killer. Now, if George Gordon came over here and gave you this warning, I wouldn't expect you to listen to me, because what do I know? I've never been in the military. I don't know jack's diddly squat about military preparedness. All I know is old Will Rogers says what I read in the papers, and what I'm reading in the papers and what I'm reading here in this book called Strategic Relocation to say, listen, things ain't near as good as you thought they were. If you've been relying on USA Today, maybe you ought to get a copy of the International Forecaster. Maybe you ought to take a look maybe at the Privateer or the Money Changer and get a little different perspective on what the hell's going on around you over here and listen to what somebody else has got to say for change. I know it's a wild new concept, but tuck it in your heart and see what you think about it. Now, nuclear weapons. United States of America, as of 1997, and this material is compiled from unclassified, no secrets here, just unclassified Department of Energy, Department of Defense, and various internet sources. The United States has constructed 70,000 warheads and, incredibly, is in the process of dismantling 58,000 of those. So most of the nuclear materials are recycled into new weapons. The current U.S. inventory contains 12,000 weapons, with approximately 9,000 in active service. The remaining 3,000 retired weapons are in storage, either awaiting dismantling, acting as an inactive reserve. No new nuclear warheads have been produced in the past 8 years, and a good portion of the highly trained personnel experienced in this field have been let go. The United States is currently disarming most of its existing nuclear arsenal and is even shutting down most of its capacity to build new weapons, which is very troubling in light of Russian deception. If the START II treaty is implemented, the United States will further disarm to 4,450 warheads with a combined inactive reserve of 5,000 units. This inactive reserve is composed of weapons that are intact but not operational. Tritium production facilities would have to be re-implemented, followed by the modification of inactive warheads so that they can mate with modern delivery systems. Now, the following are the locations of key stockpiles of military uranium and plutonium. These are not primary targets for attack, but would be hit in any extended war. And he goes on, he gives you a list of these, like Rocky Flats and Savannah River and Sandia National Laboratory, Los Alamos National Laboratory. All right, so without boring you to death over here, if you lived near the Mound Plant, Ohio, plutonium finishing plant, Hanford, Washington, or Kansas City plant in Missouri, the Kansas City plant in Missouri produces and procures non-nuclear, electric, electronic, electromechanical, mechanical, plastic, and non-fissionable metal components for the Department of Energy Weapons Program. Now, I live 5 hours from Kansas City. So I sit here in my little bunker, the Gordon Bunker, in Isabella, Missouri, 5 hours from a nuclear site, which may or may not be bombed with a nuclear weapon. So I have to be prepared then to live 5 hours away from a nuclear blast zone. And I am, and I did, and I think you should be too. Now, what if you live in Jackson County? What if you live near or in Kansas City? What does that tell you folks up there? Now, I'm not telling you to move out of Kansas City. Hell, if that's where you want to live, get after it. But you know, you ought to at least be alerted to the fact that President Bush, living in the White House in Washington, knowing that Washington is a potential target area, lives in a building that is on top of a nuclear blast protection bunker under the White House and the congressman under the Capitol, and that they have provisions for rapid evacuation from Washington so that they can jump in their helicopter and get to Camp David, Maryland, where they have extended facilities where the president can live for years on end, like Hitler did in his bunker in Berlin, underground and survive it all. So I'm sitting here saying, well, if President Bush is protected, then how come Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife don't have the same protections or at least the same warning? So now you know. If you're living in Kansas City, you need to be protected just like George Bush. And if you can't afford those kind of multi-million dollar preparations, then Joel Skousen says, why don't you move from your job at McDonald's in Kansas City and take another job at McDonald's in Springfield, Missouri, which is 3 hours away from the blast zone, so that you can die slowly of radiation poisoning instead of getting killed on day one with the blast. And then if you were to prepare just a little bit further with some duct tape and plastic, you could probably survive in your own house or your own apartment right there in Springfield, Missouri, if you just knew how or if you just had the preparations. All right, with that, let's pause here for a moment and give you a reminder that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, history, health, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors and publications that we endorse and recommend are necessarily going to reciprocate. And that's because most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans. And we don't necessarily endorse everything in that, you know, or an editorial review. All right, now the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Let me give you a reminder here that we're offering a new class on health and healing, which covers the alternative methods being used for the treatment of such diseases as cancer and other degenerative diseases that affect about half of Americans now in the United States, and how to prevent these degenerative diseases and to use the application of essential oils, super nutritional foods, and etc. And this class includes hands-on teaching, paperwork, allergic reaction testing and training, and pressure points and so on, acupressure application. The class is coming February the 5th through the 9th, February 5th through the 9th here in Isabel. If you're interested, then please call us here at the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing this strategic relocation book written by Joel Scows. I'm going to give you his name and address here one more time. You can probably get a copy of a book like this from a used bookstore. The book is pretty old. It's published in 1998. Scows may have moved the Swift Learning Resources, which is the publisher out in American Fork, Utah, maybe out of business. You know, we don't know. Best I can do is give you the old names and contacts and numbers and emails. And if they're still there and in business, you can probably get some of these books or get some copies of them from the author or the publisher. If not, then you go to a used bookstore and just tell them to plug in Strategic Relocation, North American Guide to Safe Places by Joel M. Skousen, S-K-O-U-S-E-N. And they'll put that into their computer and they'll find a copy of this book somewhere in the world. They're plugged into about 500,000 other bookstores. And, you know, there might only be 100 of these books available worldwide. Or left, you know, left around. But you'll find those 100. They'll be in a bookstore someplace. Somebody's got it in inventory. And if the book costs you $100, go ahead and buy it. You know, if it's $75, buy it. The information in here is priceless. This is detailed information, and you're going to love it. If you don't, you know, if you're thinking about living, you know, if you're thinking about surviving this thing that's coming upon us, well, then a book like this might not be the only book in the world, but it's a 1 in 100. I've read a lot of books on subsistence and survival, and I've got a lot, and I teach a lot. I run a school. I teach this very same thing. And this is a 1 in 100 book, 1 in 100. Here's the number. It's 1-800-292-2831. So jot that one down, 1-800-292-2831. That's the publisher, Swift Learning Resources, American Fork, Utah. Now, the author is Joel M. Skousen, 290 West, 580 South. Orem, O-R-E-M, Utah, 84058. Again, that's 290 West, 580 South, Orem, O-R-E-M, Utah. The zip code is 84058. Now, you had a telephone number in those days. It was 801-224-4746. Again, that's 801-224-4746. And at that time, he also had an email called J. Skousen. J, this is all one word, just J, S-K-O-U-S-E-N, J. Skousen, at enol.com. I don't know what ENOL is, but it's jskousen at enol.com. If the book is more than $100, well, you know, maybe it's worth $200 if you needed the information and didn't have it. He's also got a section in here about living close to a nuclear power plant, which he recommends against. But not because he's opposed to nuclear energy, which he seems to think is a pretty good idea, but because of the potential for terrorist attacks and the lack of preparation by government to prevent such attacks. Not because of the engineering and designing of American nuclear facilities, but because of the government's laxity in preventing an attack upon those nuclear facilities, power plants. You ought to be somewhere away from it. And here's why. Let's suppose that you're living next to Three Mile Island, and there's a meltdown. And you're 4 miles away, maybe downwind. Boys and girls, none of these people have to pay you a quarter for the damages that occur to you from such damages. Are you aware of that? No insurance company is going to pay. The power company doesn't have to pay. Westinghouse and General Electric don't have to pay you. They're exempted by law from having to pay you any damages if you're living around one of these nuclear facilities. Now, if you come onto my property, step into a hole and break your legs, I'm liable and I got to pay. But if a nuclear facility melts down, destroys your house, and kills your family, and you survive it, you can't get a quarter for it. And so Skousen comes up and says, well, then why in hell would you want to live next to one? There's something to lose and nothing to gain. So go ahead and sell your house now to somebody else and let him take the loss. And you be smart enough to relocate to another location where if something happens, you might get paid for it. You'll stand a better chance of getting paid by an insurance company in Biloxi, Mississippi for a title surge that is specifically excluded from your insurance policy than you are of getting paid for a nuclear incident next to a power plant. So you can go from impossible to less than impossible. All right, now there's more to it. He lists a lot of nuclear sites, you know, like Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, and I gave you some of those sites, and he says, you know, these places are kind of bad. Get away from them. I'm not going to cite them all here because there's about 25 or 30. Get the book, and then you'll have them all. Now, the current nuclear forces, in its continual pursuit of almost unilateral disarmament, since the Russians are cheating on every treaty, the United States plans on complying with the START II treaty, which it has no obligation to do since it has not been ratified, no later than 2003. And I don't expect the Russian attack before 2003. The United States will be deactivating the 50 Peacekeeper missiles, its most powerful and versatile land-based missile, and will rely solely on the Minuteman III, which is over 20 years old and lacks the power to penetrate any of the Russian-hardened silos. You got that, kids? Our Minuteman III is over 20 years old and can't penetrate any of the hardened Russian silos. And the 50 Peacekeeper missiles that can do that are deactivated. Now, that's called unilateral disarmament. Remember, we've been talking about the insanity of unilateral disarmament. America has, past tense, unilaterally disarmed its nuclear strike force. It's already a done deal, past tense. While the Chinese are busily learning how to knock out communication satellites. Did you see that in the news the other day? I just thought I'd share it with you. Now, not only did your God tell you that nuclear bomb war is coming, but now you're getting it from a military man named Joel Skousen and says, hey, wake up. Wake up. Get the Vaseline out. Here it comes. So I'm just a reporter. I'm here to report to you. Pay attention now to what's going on around you. Now, most people aren't going to pay attention, and most people don't really give a rat's, you know what, one way or the other. If you don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. If you do, well, then it's time to take some evasive action. There are some big cities in America that are not prime nuclear attack sites. You may be in one of them, but how do you know? How do you know what the Russians have targeted in? How do you know what the Chinese have got targeted? I don't know. Skousen doesn't claim to know. But he says, hey, there's primary targets and there's secondary targets, and he's got them all listed. And he says, now pay attention, kids, and then relocate out of those areas. Omaha, Nebraska is a primary target area because of SAC Air Force headquarters. If you live in Omaha, Nebraska, you're probably toast. Now, if you're, like I said before, if you're a plumber, carpenter, electrician in Omaha, Nebraska, you were born there, lived there all of your lives, loved the location. It's a hell of a neat place. I don't deny that. But there are carpenters, plumbers, and electricians working down here in Springfield, Missouri, too, and that's not a primary target location. And you'll live longer in Springfield than you're going to live in Omaha, Nebraska. So Skousen says, you know, in your own self-interest, you ought to be thinking about moving out of there. And he's got a long story to tell you here about nuclear. And I'm just zeroing in on one item here, just the nuclear problem. Hell, there's about 30 problems here that you need to be concerned with, you know, like hurricanes. So you get away from Biloxi, Mississippi, and all of a sudden hurricanes aren't a top priority anymore. But if you relocated from Biloxi to Omaha, Nebraska, kids, it's true, you're probably not going to die from a hurricane because we don't have any statistical evidence that anybody's ever died from a hurricane in Omaha, Nebraska. And some guy's going to write me an email and say to me, and there is also no statistical evidence of anybody dying in a nuclear attack in Omaha, Nebraska either, Gordon. So put that in your pipe and smoke it. So I'm sitting here saying, well, I'll bet you got a hell of a lot better chance of getting killed in a nuclear attack in Omaha, Nebraska than you do in Forsyth, Missouri. And so if you want my money, I'm going to live in Forsyth, Missouri. Now, there's thousands of places around the country that you can locate into, and there's 3,500 counties in this country, and Skousen's covered every county in the United States, and he's rated every county in the United States. And I think that's pretty darn good. Now, we teach a subsistence and survival school down here also. And then after you have avoided the nuclear attack in Omaha, you may have to live for the next 3, 4, 5 years. And how are you going to live? Where are you going to get your food, your clothing, and your shelter, you know? And so, you know, might call us here at the law school, and maybe we could give you a few pointers along that line and suggest to you that maybe you need 6 raised beds, maybe you need some seeds, and maybe you could tough this out. Do you have a subsistence and survival plan, a long-term plan that extends over, let's say, 5 or 10 years? Have you thought about living through? Now, I know before Noah's flood, I'm sure that people were saying this little ditty. If the world is flooded and everybody is killed, I don't want to live in such a world, and so therefore I might as well die in the flood. I hear people say that if there's going to be a nuclear war, I don't want to live in a war after that nuclear war has terminated, and so therefore I might as well die in the nuclear war. I'd like to listen to that guy's tape recorded message as he is dying. Kids, I've never met anybody yet that wasn't being threatened, that didn't say or call out or pray to God, oh, help me, save me. You know, the people on the Titanic were all scrambling, fighting for a place on the stern as it was headed down into the ocean. And you know, your senses tell you when you're being threatened, your adrenaline starts to flow, you're going to work real hard to survive. You know, if you're a drowning man in the river, you're going to be kicking and flailing and scrambling to get to the top so that you can breathe. I don't believe for a minute that a drowning man in the river just puts his hands behind his head and lays back in the water and says, well, I might as well just relax and die because that's what's coming. Now you're going to be scrambling there. Even if you can't swim, you're going to be trying to learn real fast. So those of us that look ahead, you know, and say, like Skousen here says, look ahead and let's start thinking about Omaha, Nebraska as a long-term place to live after we have told you about the current nuclear practices of the Clinton and Bush administrations and how they're prepared to survive nuclear war. And ask yourself, well, if Bush can survive nuclear war, why shouldn't we? And if these people can live in a post-nuclear age, how come you and I can't do it? Same thing with biology. You know, we've been listening a lot to this bird flu thing, you know. And one of these days, they're going to unleash that bird flu. I don't doubt but what it's a CIA or an MI6 or somebody's experiment in biological warfare. And one of these days, they'll unleash that upon the world and probably kill people like they did with the Spanish flu back in World War I. Killed about 50 million people. The people that are in control of the world are diabolically evil. I mean, these guys have got evil written on them that I don't think that Joe Stalin and Adolf Hitler or Genghis Khan could have imagined. Kids, they're talking about reducing the Earth's population by 90%. My God, have you got any idea how many people that is? You know, 90% of 6 billion people is somewhere around 5.5 billion people that they're planning on terminating. It's called world population reduction. Now, I don't doubt for a minute that these guys are serious. And I'm sitting here saying, well, my God, if they're serious, I've got to get just as serious as they are. If they're serious about killing me, I've got to get real serious about living. If these guys are real serious about unilateral nuclear disarmament, I'm not going to stop it. But hey, kids, can you see what the ultimate end of that's going to be? You know, the Chinese and the Russians have been working mighty hard, for many years, trying to take over our position as the dominant military, political, and economic force in the world. We've been on top, and they want to be on top, and they're going to work real hard to knock us down and take our place. Now, you know, the British, you know, were the top dogs on the totem pole back in the 19th century. They had this world-ruling empire. And then, of course, there were other countries in the world, like the Germans, and, you know, the Japanese, and the Americans, and everybody else that wanted to knock them off of their perch and take over. And they did. But, you know, the English didn't disappear from the world. They're still over there. You know, they're still living their lives. They're not the world's preeminent economic power. They're not the world's number one nuclear power or military power or naval power like they used to be. But they're still alive and kicking, and they're still over there living their lives and doing their thing. And in the post-American Empire era, there will be Americans, and there'll still be life. And it's just that the Chinese and the Russians will be calling the shots, you know. You'll have the Chinese army occupying 130 countries around the world. Instead of America having military forces in 130 countries around the world, you'll have the Chinese and the Russians. They'll have a military presence in 130 countries around the world. Well, America will still be here, and the Canadians and the Australians. But, kids, the world's going to take a change. You know, it's going to be a little different. And there's going to be survivors, and there's going to be some victims. Now, he talks about nuclear forces, and he gets into kind of hot and heavy over here. And he says, the target area is in a nuclear strike scenario. Here's a list of what the Russians must hit to ensure a successful first strike that will totally disable the United States military's ability to retaliate against Russia. They've got to hit all of the land-based ICBMs in their silos prior to launch, which is now assured by our own policy. They have to knock out all Trident sub-bases, which also store about half the inventory of Trident missiles and two-thirds of the available submarines. Our own policies make sure that no more than one-third can be at sea at any one time. They must knock out all coordination and communications headquarters, especially the Washington, D.C., Weather Mount Complex in Maryland, Cheyenne Mountain near Colorado Springs, and Offutt Air Force Base in Omaha. If you live in Colorado Springs, Omaha, Nebraska, or you live in Maryland or Washington, D.C., you can rest assured that you won't have to be concerned about living any longer. Kids, you know, American foreign policy, American nuclear policy, coupled with Chinese and Russian nuclear policy, ensure that these target areas will be nuked. The plans are already in place. All space satellite tracking and communication stations to blind the eyes of the U.S. military. Kids, the Chinese just knocked out a communication satellite in orbit. Kids, what do you think they're learning how to do that for? Kids, you don't need ice skates unless you're preparing to learn how to ice skate. So when you see some guy out there with ice skates, you can be pretty sure that that guy's serious about learning how to ice skate. People that knock out satellites in orbit evidently have a reason for learning how to knock out satellites in orbit. And then all intercontinental range bombers capable of reaching Russia with refueling, they got to knock out all the refueling aircraft bases and all of the low-frequency submarine communication systems so that the Tridents cannot launch their missiles. Now, the maps on the following pages show you where these targets are located and where the fallout will drift based upon prevailing wind patterns. Actual winds on the day of a strike may vary. Some areas are shown with two wind fans to demonstrate this variability. And you should become intimately familiar with the local wind shifts and the patterns so that you can make basic wind direction predictions even when you don't have access to forecasts. And then you need to learn some basic nuclear blast precautions. I won't get into the nuclear blast precautions because if you're close enough, as the old saying goes, if you're close enough to stick them with a bayonet, you're close enough to shoot them with a bullet. So I would say if somebody warned you about the nuclear blast sites, you ought to be smart enough to get the hell out of the blast area. And then if you got any brains at all, you'll get away from the fallout zones as well when you relocate. And surprisingly, you're going to be surprised to learn that you probably, if you're out in the countryside anywhere, you probably aren't in a blast area and you're probably not even in a fallout zone. For instance, where I live here in Missouri, we're not in a blast area and we're not even in a fallout zone. Our map is white where I live. Now, around me, there's all kinds of black and gray, but not right here where I'm at. And you might just actually be living in one of those good places. Now, we here at the law school have five zones or five areas of the United States that we recommend. Skousen here goes a little bit further. He's got more than five, but he's done a lot more work at it. So let me give you his name again. It's Joel Skousen, and the book is called Strategic Relocation. If you can't get it at one of the sites that I've given you or one of the numbers, then go to your local bookstore, used bookstore. Tell him what you want. He'll probably find it for you. Hey, we're out of time again. We've got to give you a final reminder that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by The Law School. That's Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide daily over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults in compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling site on the webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Hey, time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, folks. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.